And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Thursday, April 14th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, halfway through April. Hello, Melody, and happy National Gardening Day.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
You bet. I'm going to celebrate by pulling some serious weeds in my garden after today's program and maybe even plant some sugar snap pea seeds to get some growth underway. Got to fight this food inflation somehow, some way.
Yeah, I know. We're going to talk about that here a little later on in the program. And, you know, talking about prices and everything. And inflation we'll be talking about, but this bird flu in the U.S. Is going to have a major impact also on food prices. And I don't know, it says the prices for processed eggs, which go into everything from salad dressings to cake mix, are soaring to record highs due to bird flu outbreaks in the Midwestern U.S. So not only do we just have inflation, but we have all kinds of reasons why prices are rising. The biggest one is our monetary inflation, you know, due to our fiat currency. But you're having all these other symptoms. They're just adding on to those higher and higher prices. And I don't know, Dave, what will happen is like, you know, like the bird flu. Okay, so the bird flu gets eliminated and those prices begin to come down. So D.C., will claim, oh, see what we did? We brought down inflation. You know, but you only have one sector or something that might be impacting a downcrease and not the true discussion of inflations. But anyway, hey,
they just mask the chickens as they're en route to the slaughterhouses.
Yeah. So gold today, we had a high of $1,980. Oh, and it's good to be back, ladies and gentlemen. I've been gone most of the week, or I should say all of the week. We will be closed tomorrow as it is Good Friday. So as usual, when we have holidays, you will have a beautiful hour of music. And I've been picking out some really lovely Easter music. So you can tune in tomorrow. I think we're going to try to do it without any commercial interruptions, and we'll start off with I think we can do it. We'll either start off or end with a really beautiful version of Hallelujah and amongst that. So make sure you tune in tomorrow and just relax and be thankful for so many things. Gold today was down $4.10 at $1,974. Silver was down 14 cents at $25.68. Platinum was up 6 at $1,000 on the news. Palladium was up $38 at $2,430. The USDX today, I saw while I was gone that it bumped up over 100, and we're there today, 100.34. It was only a year ago that it was ready to break 90, so it's had an incredible move to the upside, and it just kind of cracks me up because you hear all these discussions that, oh, dollar strength, and you usually do see gold weaken a little bit when you have this amount of strength with the dollar, but we usually don't have the number of inflation that we have, too, and so it is kind of interesting to see gold rise at the same time as the U.S. dollar. Crude oil was up $3 today at 107.36. The paper markets today, I think they were positive. Well, they all turned negative. We have, let's see. The Dow was down 113 points. 34,451. S&P was down 54, 4,392. The NASDAQ was down the most, down 2% at 13,351. Asia was positive across the board. Most of them, the Shanghai and the Hang Seng, were both up over 1%. Europe was positive. The biggest gainer over there, none of them. The big three that we watched really didn't move 1% at all, so they just moved a little bit. 10-year yield, 2.82%, 2.82%, and that was positive today. It was in green territory. Brent was up 2.25%. Brent, that was 111. Natural gas, 7.32. I mean, up another almost 5%. Everybody talks about oil. Not too many people, Dave, are talking about natural gas and about where that's headed and where it's been going. So incredible moves in that territory. So, and, you know, we might continue to see more pressures on the energy sector. You know, we often talk about the doomsday clock. Everybody pretty much knows about the doomsday clock. And it might just be moving a little bit closer to the midnight hour. Russia feels or says that the nuclear-free Baltic region would no longer be possible if Finland and Sweden became NATO members. Dmitry Medvedev, former president and deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, said today, if Sweden and Finland join NATO, the length of the alliance's land borders with the Russian Federation will more than double. He added that Russia will have to seriously strengthen the grouping of land forces and air defense, deploy significant naval forces in the waters of the Gulf of Finland. In this case, it will no longer be possible to talk about any nuclear-free status of the Baltic. The balance must be restored. And I'm going to bring to the listeners, I can remember many, many years ago, Bob Chapman on the program talking about World War III would be stalled, would be started in the Baltic region. He said that, 15, 20 years ago? He says that's where it will be. And it seems, Dave, that that's pretty much a little bit of prophecy there on that from him. Too bad he's not with us any longer, but it certainly is heated up in that area. Right? Are you there with us, Dave? Did he mute? I guess he did. So I guess I'll just keep talking. And Russia does have an issue with those countries joining NATO. And Finland, I think, has an 830-mile border with Russia. So that's quite significant. And Finland and Sweden, as well as Ukraine, are already enhanced opportunity partners of NATO. That's kind of like the closest form of a partnership, but you have 14 countries have joined the Collective Defense Alliance since 1997. And I guess more Ukrainian news today. I guess those officials said they hit the flagship of Russia's Black Sea Fleet. Are you there, Dave?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Huh, okay. It looks like I might have a short in my connection. So that's we'll keep it calm and collective, and hopefully I stay connected.
Were you talking that whole length of time?
I was not. No, I heard you. I just couldn't be heard.
But anyway, we started talking about Ukraine and claims to have blasted the Russian flagship. The vessel sank. Russia said that the Moskva was badly damaged by a fire that forced the warship's evacuation, but that it was still afloat. The loss of the warship, named for the Russian capital, would be a major military and symbolic defeat for Moscow as we see their troops trying to regroup. Now, this ship can carry about 16 long-range cruise missiles, and its removal from combat would kind of greatly reduce Russia's firepower in the Black Sea, Dave.
Yeah, now Russia again has denied it was struck, saying instead there was a big fire aboard. I mean, either way, there's going to be a price to pay for the commander of that boat because of the importance of the Moskva. It's a major blow to Russian naval prestige. We haven't, we the U.S. and Western nations have been able to reconcile the different or fundamentally different accounts of what happened. In fact, cloud cover has made it impossible right now for the satellites up above to even locate the ship or to determine its condition. So who knows what really happened, but in either case, a ship that can carry 16 cruise missiles being down is a hole in Russia's offensive. So we'll see what happens.
You know, I don't know how anybody could take, Janet Yellen seriously. You know, it's hard to take a lot of the administration very seriously. But, you know, she did deliver a kind of a stern message to China and some other countries. I doubt they're going to pay any attention to her. But she's warning them about if they want to help Russia evade international sanctions, they better beware. The U.S. goal right now is to maintain global unity around financial punishment of Russia for the invasion. It's a contrast to the usual focus of these gatherings. This time, technical talk of capital flows and current accounts will be replaced by war and its consequences. Now, this is these diplomats are set to come to D.C. in the next coming days for the spring meetings of the IMF and the World Bank. So Yellen's warning lays down the gauntlet. So, but she did tell the Atlantic Council, it's now evident, though, that the war between Russia and Ukraine has redrawn the contours of the world economic outlook. Let me now say a few words to those countries who are currently sitting on the fence, perhaps seeing an opportunity to gain by preserving the relationship with Russia and backfilling the void left by others. I don't know how much power she really has, you know, with this Atlantic Council. I can't imagine that she has much, or if anybody's really going to listen to her. Countries are going to do what they want to do to best suit their, you know, their citizens and, you know, their corruption and so forth, Dave, I would think.
Well, she certainly has more influence with the Atlantic Council than she does China. And I think that's what people will be looking at here, if indeed there will even be a response, which there usually is through the Chinese defense or foreign ministry. So let's see what tomorrow brings in that respect, if anything, at all. But, you know, China, we know, has remained cozy with Russia. And that in the minds of Western analysts raises the possibility that by embracing Russia, China could, in fact, risk its major role in trading around the world. Again, you know, this is just, I don't know, perhaps she just needed to fill in the day, or perhaps because of the influx of finance type folks from the IMF and World Bank, she felt compelled to raise what I'm sure she thinks is a timely issue. Yeah. But we will see. I'm sure they're going to talk mainly about the effects that these sanctions are having on particularly small developing countries across the world.
More money.
Yep.
Give them more money. Let's help everybody else. Forget about helping the people here in this country. Let's just go help everybody else. And, you know, we keep paying for it. We keep dishing it out. I saw a sign today where the IRS has collected more taxes than ever before. So, hey, you know, the story continues. And people continue to spend in March. As we see inflation, it doesn't seem to be, you know, to me, I don't think $4 a gallon of gas is going to do too much to the people's spending because they still have their credit cards. As we see inflation rise, as, you know, I'm sure you spoke about this week, to the highest level since 1981.
Yeah.
Retail sales climbed 0.5% from the previous month, a little bit less than the expectations and less than the upwardly revised 0.8% gain that was in February. We saw inflation rising 1.1% for the month as measured by the Consumer Price Index. Retail sales are not adjusted for inflation. Consequently, the biggest gain in sales for the month came at the gas stations, 8.9% increase in sales. And gasoline prices rose 18.3% during that period. And the sector has seen a 37% sales burst over the past year, Dave. Amazing.
Yeah, well, what I find interesting is that in the midst of all this, online sales fell sharply, falling over 6% for the month, while general merchandise stores saw a gain of nearly 5.5%. Now, despite these falling online sales, Amazon's announced a 5% surcharge to its third-party sellers starting at the end of the month. More on that at the top of the next segment. Sporting goods, electronics stores saw 3+% gains. Bars and sales at food and beverage stores, along with bars and restaurants, rose 1%. That's for the month. Retail sales broadly rose almost 7% from a year ago. Now, in a related government report, inflation continued to hit imports, with import prices raising 2.6% in March, the largest monthly increase in 11 years. On an annualized basis, those prices jumped 12.5%. So it's hitting us from every angle, Melody.
Yeah, and it's interesting on online sales, but you know what? When you go online and you look at some of those products, I mean, they're having delivery problems. I mean, lots of things, yeah, you can still get overnight and so forth, but there's many of them who, you know, I was looking for something very common. No delivery till March. I mean, not March, but May and Jeez. June. Yeah, I know. Something very simple. And so, yeah, you go to your local, you know, department stores and so forth, and I guess it's a good thing to help the local economies. So, yeah, things are changing. It's interesting to see what makes them change. And but we'll be right back. We're heading into a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, 1-800-375-4188 for discount gold and silver trading. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and, of course, the weekly blog. I don't know if we're going to have one this week due to Easter, Dave. Are we going to be missing this week?
No, we're going to have something tomorrow morning. Something timely.
Okay. Great.
And something, we'll call it concise.
Great. Super. And the newsletter? Can I have one of those?
That'll be on Monday.
All right. Okay. 1-800-375-4188 and dgscoins.com. Get signed up. And here's Johnny. No, that's another. Here's the jobless claims rise.
Here's Thursday.
It's Thursday. Yes, the number of people seeking jobless benefits ticked up last week, but they still remain low. Jobless claims rose by 18,000 to 185,000, the Labor Department said this morning. And so they're still low, if you believe them. We expect initial claims to remain below 200,000 the weeks ahead. Anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
What do we want to say there? No, I guess not. I mean, the one statistic that stuck out to me that there's a record number of 1.7 job openings for every unemployed American. And certainly not surprising, they keep referring to the near 50-year low in the unemployment rate at 3.6%. It's not 3.6%. It's more than double that. When you use the government's U6 number, they just seem to ignore it. That continues to be a pet peeve of mine. But hey, what can we do except report the facts?
Yep. Right. So if they're fudging that, look what else they're fudging. Consumer sentiment, that rises, which, you know, it's really, really, then $4 gasoline really doesn't matter to anybody. Inflation doesn't seem to matter if consumer sentiment rises. Mm-hmm. They're positive about the economy. It actually rose to a 3-month high early this month. There's optimism about job growth, wage expectations. I guess that kind of outweighs high inflation. So I guess that's why people are happy. University of Michigan sentiment index increased to 65.7 from 59. That's a big jump. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I'd have to say it's probably fudged.
Well, I mean, especially, when Even if it's not fudged, you know, it makes you wonder about the reliability of the data and who all is being interviewed in these in this particular survey. But whatever, the numbers seem to be all over the place.
Yeah. Consumers are still expecting inflation to rise 5.4% over the next year. And does that mean they're going to they're expecting it to rise another 5% on top of where we're at today?
No, I don't think so. I think that is an expectation of what the level will be by the end of by a year from now, shall we say. So, in fact, while I'm sure there are inherent concerns about the high level of inflation now, they see it actually going down or moderating, however you want to characterize it, over the next year. You know, it's even lower, right, when you look out 5 to 10 years. 3%.
I wonder if the consumer's expectations of 5.4% is similar along the lines as Jerome Powell when he says inflation was transitory.
I have a feeling not, since they look at the core PCE, which is already what, in the mid sixes. I mean, they probably, I think their number is lower than the 5.4, but consumer expectations have a way of being self-fulfilling prophecies. So I would tend to rely more on this than our so-called experts' prognostications, even in the short term.
I would still expect after a year it's going to be higher. That I can't see anything that's, you know, even if he raises the rates to the degree he's going to, he's between a rock and a hard place. It ain't going to work. It's just not going to work. So maybe they might tame inflation, but, you know, an ugly beast is going to rear its head in another area of the economy. So it's they should be thankful for today, as they can keep a little bit of calm into the markets and into the economy, that it's still going along without any major.
Well, wait until the coming increases and the quantitative tightening hit GDP.
Yeah.
And GDP goes into a tailspin and people start losing jobs. Then we'll see. Rates start to come down again, and how that affects inflation. I mean, who knows? But I'm afraid that we're in for some unsettled time in the next couple of years.
I mean, who knows? You're right. We should know if we were getting the real truth about things and the right stats and the right numbers, you know, that would tell everything. But, you know, when they can say we only had a one-month recession back in 2020, I mean, really? It just cracks me up. Home prices for sale is down. Prices and mortgages, of course, are up. The number of homes for sale nationally remains near record lows, fueling fierce competition among buyers. From L.A. to Raleigh, North Carolina, when a house does hit the market, it typically sells within days. We see these bidding wars. They're fairly common. And that continues to drive the price well above what the people were even asking. Would-be buyers planning to finance their purchase with a home loan are often losing out to investors and others able to buy a home with cash. A quarter of all homes that were sold in February were purchased with cash, up from 22% a year ago. Now, this is all from according to the National Association of Realtors. Real estate investors accounted for 19% of transactions in February, up from 17% a year ago. Home prices in the Phoenix area, they jumped 20% from a year ago, and they just keep going up, up, and away, Dave.
Yeah, that investor impact on the market's got to be interesting. I mean, how does a young couple just, you know, get ready to buy their first home, you know, can barely afford a 5% or 10% down payment, much less 20% to avoid the mortgage premium. How do they compete with an all cash deal that, well, a team of investors is putting together? You know, I remember last summer when we sold my now late mother's house. The only bids we got on the home were from investors, and they were all teams of investors, teams of two, a team of three, and even a team of four. That's just, I think, an example of what's going on in a wider way all across the country.
But usually investors are supposed to buy low. Now, these are the best investors that are going to flip them. Or flip these homes?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm seeing both things. I'm seeing flips, but I'm also seeing holding on to them now for cash flow purposes. So it kind of depends on the team of investors you're looking at. I haven't seen the statistics about, you know, what proportion. I mean, how many homes being bought by investors are for, you know, holding on and renting to others versus, you know, fixing up and flipping. That would be worth some a little bit of research. But, I mean, we know that, I mean, higher mortgage rates now could limit the pool of buyers, particularly non-investors, and cool the rate of home price growth. I mean, that's good news for buyers. But higher rates also weaken buying power. We know that the average rate in a 30-year mortgage has gone from 3% a year ago to, well, now they're saying it's about 4.7, according to Freddie Mac. Just a week or two ago, we were seeing rates right above 5%. So it's a conundrum for buyers. Not so much so for sellers, though.
For these buyers paying 5%, and they're not gonna pay 6%, are they?
Oh, mortgages?
Yeah.
I can't imagine so. I mean, that could really crash the market. I mean, yeah. Because certainly you won't have any refinancings, and the new homes, I mean, it's like, well, let's think about staying where we are right now, and we'll think about going from rental to owning, or, you know, moving up a notch another year, two or three, when rates come back down. I think you're right there. I mean, if they, if after a year, the Fed's interest rate increases result in a 10-year treasury yield, you know, 1.5% higher than it is now. The effect that's going to have on mortgages. Wow, you're right. That could be therein could lie the pin that bursts the housing bubble, Melody.
Yeah, because, I mean, that would have to offset the housing prices. So as those rates rise, home prices are going to will come down to offset the increase.
Hmm? Yeah. Well, that's certainly better for buyers, right?
Well, markets, you know, they go up and they always correct.
They're quirky.
You know, so, but one day when everybody's broke. You know, when they won't go up, it's a, you know, so anyway, as the Fed here is increasing rates, the European Central Bank has decided to keep their monetary policy unchanged. They're going to quit their bond buying, I guess, that, you know, in the third quarter, as they say now. But, you know, they have the same problem we have. And so, again, our problems, I mean, all these central banks are between a rock and a hard place because they're all experiencing the same thing and because they all did the same thing, and it's called debt. So in a press conference following the release of the statement, the ECB president Lagarde said that how the Eurozone economy develops will crucially depend on how the Ukraine conflict evolves and on the impact of current sanctions and on possible further measures. She also noted that inflation had increased significantly and will remain high over the coming months. They don't say what their inflation rate is, do they?
7.5%.
Is 7.5%? Yeah.
That's what they reported as.
Yeah. They probably use the same accountants as we use.
Oh, boy. Oh, my.
Anything else you'd like to add to that?
Well, just two things quickly. One, the interest rates on the ECB's main refinancing operations and the interest rates on their marginal lending program and their deposit program remains unchanged at 0%, 0.25%, and on the deposit facility, -0.5%.
Yep.
So that's interesting. And bond buying under the ECB's roughly 1.9 trillion euro, that's 2 trillion US dollars under their pandemic emergency purchase program called PEP, ended in March. However, purchases under the older plan were being used as a bridge through the end of this program. So a lot of things in transition here in for the rest of this year, and it's really going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out, and certainly how we're casting it by the end of the summer, Melody.
And you know what's interesting? When you look at these numbers, when you look at the interest rate on the ECB's, what you talked about, I mean, looking at the numbers and talking about this, how can anybody think that these countries and the financial systems are healthy? They're anything but healthy. They're anything but, I mean, they're broken. I mean, how can they, anybody look at that and think it's a good thing? And it's just, their ability and their power really is incredible these things just don't seem to matter anymore. Everybody is focused on everything else and nobody really sees the damage that's really being done, or they might see it, but it's not discussed. It's not to be told. We don't want to tell anybody the damage that it's doing or what it will do in the future.
Well,
and how purchasing power will be eliminated, basically, Dave.
Yeah. Well, they're good at a couple of things, Melody. They're good at compartmentalizing a wide variety of facts. They're good, and just as we're good at predicting upcoming breaks.
Oh, you're good. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody catching up on office work. You can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, a couple of quick items here. The pandemic shakeup in 2020 led to a surge in store closures. We know, coupled with dozens of retailers filing for bankruptcy, and that emptied out shopping malls in my part of the world, I'm sure yours as well, and left vacancies growing in New York City and other major cities around the country and around the world. Now, the aftermath, I guess, was a temporary relief from even more closures as companies took the chance in 2020 to quickly slim down their store counts when consumers were holed up at home. In fact, last year, retailers reported net store openings, marking a sudden reversal from years of net decline. And, well, companies seized opportunities, take advantage of cheap rents, plus the eagerness of Americans to just get outside their homes and shop again. Now, while analysts at megabank UBS see more pain ahead, it's not as many closures as the investment bank had initially projected a year ago. Still, it's pretty stark. UBS projects between 40 and 50,000 retail stores in the U.S. will close over the next 5 years. And while that's a lot, it's down from the 80,000 closures it previously forecast. And that's out of about almost 900,000 total retail stores that the firm tracks nationwide, excluding gas stations. The estimate assumes that U.S. retail sales grow about 4% annually moving forward, and that e-commerce sales as a percentage of total retail sales grows to 25% by 2026 from 18% last year. Interesting numbers. Now, here's another that always gets the crawl. Current U.S. tax code allows some of the biggest companies in the country, some of the world, to not pay any U.S. federal corporate income tax. In fact, at least 55 of the largest corporations in America paid no federal corporate income taxes on their 2020 profits. That's according to the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Those companies include names like Whirlpool, FedEx, Nike, HP, and Salesforce. Now, it's entirely legal and certainly within the parameters of the tax code that corporations can end up paying no federal corporate income tax. course, that costs the U.S. government billions of dollars in lost revenue and drives up our debt, other things being equal. There's a bucket of corporate tax breaks that are deliberately in the tax code, too. And overall, they cost the federal government about $180 billion every year. And for comparison, the corporate tax brings in about $370 billion a year. Now, the 55 corporations cited by ITEP would have paid a collective total of $8.5 billion. Instead, they got $3.5 billion in tax rebates, collectively draining $12 billion from the U.S. Treasury. Now, those figures don't include corporations that paid only some, but not all, of these taxes. Garrett Wilson at the Tax Foundation says, I think the fundamental issue here is that there are two different ways in which corporations book their profits. The amount of profits that corporations may be reporting for financial purposes, that is, financial statement purposes, may be very different from the profits that they're reporting for tax purposes. Some of these tax expenditures, which come in many different forms, are used by companies to take advantages of rules that, you know, just simply enable them to lower their effective tax rates. For example, research into Amazon's taxes from 2018 to 2021 showed a reported $79 billion of pre-tax U.S. income. Amazon paid a collective $4 billion in federal corporate income tax in those 4 years, equating to an effective annual tax rate of about 5.1%. That's about one quarter of the federal corporate tax rate of 21%. Amazon responded, well, in 2021, we reported $2.3 billion in federal income tax expense, $5.2 billion in other federal taxes, and more than $4 billion in state and local taxes of all types. Moreover, we also collected an additional $22 billion in sales taxes for U.S. states and localities. Now, here's another story about Amazon and the vicious cycle of inflation, which we alluded to, I believe, in the first segment today. Amazon's taking a step to offset its rising costs, announcing that it will add a 5% fuel and inflation surcharge to fees it charges third-party sellers who use the e-commerce giant's fulfillment services. The company said that the added fees, which will take effect on April 28th, and going forward, will apply to both apparel and non-apparel items. How it's going to affect the prices that we pay using Amazon remains to be seen. The latest fee hike follows one announced in November by Amazon and went into effect in January. Now, in a notice sent to sellers yesterday, the company said its costs had gone up since the beginning of the pandemic because of increases in hourly wages, the hiring of workers, and construction of more warehouses. Cost obviously is passing on to a certain extent to these third-party sellers. It said it had absorbed costs whenever possible and only increased fees to address permanent costs and to be competitive with other providers. Amazon competitors FedEx and UPS both have fuel surcharges as well. Now, though the company is blaming inflation and rising fuel costs for the surcharge, Stacy Mitchell, who's co-director for the Anti-Monopoly Group Institute for Local Self-Reliance, criticized Amazon's announcement, saying it was taking advantage of the moment. Mitchell said, Amazon keeps increasing its fees on the sellers that have to depend on its platform, and that the new fees are a way to take more money out of the pockets of independent businesses and put it into Amazon's coffers. Amazon's third-party marketplace, where independent merchants list millions of their products, it's a huge part of their business, has about 2 million sellers. More than half the goods sold on Amazon.com come from these sellers. Last year, sellers paid Amazon about $103 billion in fees, which made up almost a quarter of the company's revenue. Amazon has long faced accusations of undercutting merchants that sell on its platform by making knockoffs for similar products and boosting their presence on the website. Ay, 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 ay. Well, I don't know if you saw today, Elon Musk has offered to buy Twitter at a premium that some say will make it awfully tough for Twitter management to refuse. The Twitter-obsessed billionaire, who happens to be the world's richest man right now, has offered to pay $54.20 a share in cash for the company. That values the company at $43 billion. Musk wrote in a letter addressed to Twitter's board, "My offer is my best and final offer, and if it is not accepted, I would need to reconsider my position as a shareholder." Excuse me. On Wall Street, this kind of unsolicited, juicy offer is known as a bear hug, and they leave little room for executive teams to avoid being acquired, thus the old term, hostile takeover. If the board votes not to be acquired at what would be a clear financial win for shareholders, it can open up, at least relative to the current situation, it can open up the company to a slew of lawsuits arguing that management is not acting in the best interest of shareholders. It's certainly an unpleasant alternative to walking away from a successful sale that almost certainly would pad the compensation of Twitter's top managers. But CNBC's Jim Cramer warned that Twitter's board has no choice but to reject Musk's offer to buy the company at $54.20 per share. He pointed to the potential personal liability if the board accepts Musk's offer, particularly without any negotiating. And I think therein lies the crux of where people are in this. You know, the first major offer is not normally the last one, despite what people like Musk may say. Now, interestingly, Twitter's stock jumped more than 10% in pre-market trading today, though it was only trading at around $50 this morning, below the $54 mark that Musk offered. It was actually down at $46 and change by mid-afternoon. Thus, trading so far suggests that investors are a bit skeptical this deal will go through. And you know what? Who can blame them? Now, in classic propaganda, the U.S. Economic Report of the President, published this morning by the White House Council on Economic Advisors, says the U.S. spent more in its pandemic relief efforts than other nations. The results have been higher inflation, yes, but also a much more rapid recovery. That's the key takeaway. And it's an annual official analysis of economic conditions conducted by the CEA. The Biden team isn't disputing that the president's signature pandemic aid, the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, contributed to inflation. Rather, they argue that it's created benefits that put the U.S. economy in a position to be more resilient to the shocks of this year, like the Ukraine war and rising interest rates. In a chapter focused on international comparisons, the administration economists note that the American fiscal response to the pandemic amounted to more than 25% of GDP, well above the 16% in Canada and 11.5% in the Eurozone. U.S. also ended up leading those nations in inflation rates, with consumer prices rate rising 8.5% in the U.S. versus 5.5% in Canada and 4.7% in the Eurozone, although that's up now to 7.5% as of March. CEA Chair Cecilia Rouse said the American Rescue Plan was a kind of insurance policy. She said, go back a year ago. It was not at all a given that we'd be here today with historic growth and low unemployment. Rouse noted that private economists have a wide range of estimates of how much the role ARP played. The San Francisco Fed study, for instance, put the contribution at around 0.3% of 2021 inflation, while other economists' estimates are in the 2 to 3 percentage point range. Economists also argue that the administration's fiscal actions helped fuel a more robust recovery, both in growth and jobs, making the American economy better able to weather the challenges we now face. U.S. GDP, for example, was 3% above its pre-pandemic level in the fourth quarter, by the CEA's calculations, but had shown no gain in Canada, the Eurozone, or Britain. They also say, well, consider the auto industry, which played a major role in elevated inflation last year. The CEA report notes that American auto production was stronger relative to pre-pandemic trend than in other countries. That the fact that the rise in car prices has been larger here than abroad stems partly from the particularly resilient demand created by the U.S. recovery passing through to the auto sector, while noting that high vehicle prices do pose challenges for households and businesses. The report argues that the strength of the recovery highlights the important benefits of the U.S. demand-driven recovery.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me